Welcome to yet another Men Who Support Women podcast episode. My name is Irina Sander, and I'm the author of the textbook Det Moderne India, which is written in Norwegian. And I'm also the founder of the NGO Det Moderne India, which is based in Norway. Our guest today for the Men Who Support Women podcast is Christian Ringnes. Ringnes is a Norwegian businessman and art collector. He's the owner and CEO of the investment company Eiendomsspar AS, which has interests in real estate, finance and industry. Christian is widely recognized for his unwavering commitment to arts and cultural preservation and the Artom project. If you have not seen the Artom project, which is on in Norway, you can see the exhibition this week and next week. And there is a wonderful lady, Aragwan, who has put together this amazing project. And you can not only see it, you can actually also buy some of the art that is showcased. Christian Ringnes also had a vital role in the development of the new Munch Museum at Bjørvika, which opened in 2020. He has donated millions of Norwegian crowns to support cultural preservation and has been honored with numerous awards. Overall, his impact on the preservation and advancement of Norwegian cultures is unparalleled. Welcome to the podcast, Christian.
Thank you very much. It was very kind of you to highlight my endeavors for the Munch Museum, but that was more of, I would say, intellectual and vocal support than the monetary support. But not far away from the Munch Museum, we'll find the Ekeberg Park, which is one of the world's most recognized sculpture parks. And this one is a collaboration between myself and the Commune of Oslo, where I have borne all the costs.
Yeah, and that's amazing. The park, guys, all the listeners of the Moderne India podcast, you have to see it. Ringnes donated more than $70 million, and he created the largest sculpture park, and it was opened in 2030. And I also read somewhere, Christian, that the Wall Street Journal ranks it as one of the top five parks in the world. So congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move over to the topic for today's podcast, which is men who are supporting women. In your opinion, Christian, what does equality mean and why is it important?
Well, equality at the outset means that everybody should have the same opportunities to work and to live their lives. Now, of course, here we are mostly talking about gender equality. And since men have been dominating for centuries the public and private scene, it's not enough to provide equal opportunity. We also have to help the process to put more balance than there has traditionally been. And that means quotation in certain instances, and it certainly, most of all, means being aware of where we discriminate or are not clever in promoting the female.
Yeah, and what you're saying is so true. And then I would like to ask you, Christian, what motivated you to advocate for women's and gender equality? Was this something that was part of your value system from the early years, or is this something you have been more and more vocal about as you have got more and more experience?
I think it's a mixture of the two. I certainly grew up with the two sisters and the mother. They were all very able, and I saw that they were pulling more than their fair share of what was happening at home. So I certainly saw that they were capable. But I also saw that, especially my eldest sister, she was encouraged to do a secretary education instead of doing something where she could end up as a boss. And so I always found that quite strange and quite unfair. As I have moved on in life, I've seen many examples of this kind of cultural bias or slight discrimination just by our way to think about men and women. We tend to think that men should do this and females should do that, which is not correct. And later in life, as I've gained board positions, I've always been wondering why is it when we know that 70 to 80% of all consumption is decided by females, why is it not such that the females decide more in business? Now it's happening slowly, but I'm very much for to help accelerate the process.
Well, this is wonderful to hear, because I think what you're saying, Kristian, is very much right. This kind of thinking has to start at home, because we all have daughters, or we have sisters or mothers. So it is happening in front of our eyes. And that is why it's important. That is why actually we have this podcast, Men Who Support Women, because there are amazing men like you who are seeing this, that, hey, my sister, she's smart. She should have been doing this. Or my mother has been sacrificing so much, but she could have had other choices if she had got a little bit more support. But one of the reasons why I really wanted to invite you is because you have also been quite vocal. You have advocated, for instance, for allowing women to become members of Norway's most exclusive men's club, the Norske Selskap. And to our listeners outside of Norway, this is the most exclusive club where the most powerful people, and especially then men, meet. And Kristian Ringnes has been quite vocal about writing, saying that women should be allowed to enter this club. And I would like to ask you, Kristian, how would you pursue, I mean, such powerful members to invite? How do you work to invite? Because we've also read some of the replies you've got, you know, and there's like hangama is what we call say in India, like it's a lot of uproar against this thought of allowing women to come. But when you are vocal about it, and these are the most powerful people in the Norwegian society, how do you persuade these people to change their mindset and invite women to join?
Well, it's a rather complicated story with a lot of aspects. I'm a member of this club. And if it was only a club for men, which did fly fishing, billiards, shooting, etc., I think it's fine that it remains a club for men. And more than half of the members of the club are of the very strong opinion that that is what this club should do. It should be a club among friends. And when you go there, you will see that the average age is far past what you would call influential men in their prime. I'm now 69 years old, and I'm still one of the younger people who go there.
Oh, my God.
So I think my idea was that this club would become more relevant and maybe attract also younger and more vigorous members if it was more open to society, which it used to be when it was started a couple of hundred years ago. And then there were actually also some female members when it was started in Copenhagen in Denmark. But I must admit that the efforts to include women in Det Norske Selskap was not very fruitful. I'm still a happy member of the club. And what they say there is that there is not much happening in Norske Selskap. We are some men that are having a good time together. And then, of course, I say, but okay, you have a lot of fine positions in society. So, you know, you have a responsibility. Yeah, but we tend to advocate that responsibility elsewhere. In the club, we are to have a good time and to relax. And the worst is that many of the women who are married to these men, they also support that it's a men's club, because that way they can be safe that when their men go out of the house, they will not look for other women, but they are with other men. So there are many strange things in this.
Oh, that's an interesting dimension. But, you know, I mean, given that you're saying that the average age, they don't represent the younger generation or maybe the thought leaders anymore. We have partied together, Ringnes. No, I think you also should go back and say, hey, there's this amazing woman, Aragwan, who has this project, and she just introduced me to Bollywood dance and Bollywood music. I am sure many of these members will be happy to shake their legs.
Well, I don't think you've been there.
Okay. But one of the things I enjoyed when we interacted was we started discussing privileges, you know. You are a privileged person. You inherited a lot from your family. I am very privileged coming to Norway at the age of 3 and And I have been given so many opportunities in Norway. And we also both discussed that with the privileges also comes a responsibility. But not everybody feel that. And why do you think that some individuals feel this sense of responsibility while others do not?
I think it depends a lot on your upbringing and the traditions around you. I think some people are so concerned about making success and making money that that becomes an overriding goal, and they don't really have a view for anything else. And so they can build important enterprises and do a lot of good for people by their creative powers, but they are not multidimensional and will keep on doing that. Then you have other people, which is typically what they say in America. You spend the first 50 lives of your years to get rich, and then you spend the next 50 to give it all away. And I guess I'm more aligned to that kind of thinking. I heard very early on from my very wise grandmother that the value of a person can never be measured about in terms of how much he or she has amassed for themselves. It's about how much they give to society. And when you hear these things as young, you kind of tend to adhere to it. And so therefore, for me, it's always been natural to try to give back.
Yeah. It's very interesting because I think you're right that once you have passed 50, you have seen life, then you start counting down. It's like you don't get that many party invitations, even though I must say you're an amazing guy to party with at your age. But I think there's some sense to it that when you're 50, you've had the kids, you've seen life, you've seen the ups and downs, and you become a more rounded person. Because I think ego can be a big driver that you want to achieve success, you want to create your name. And then when you pass 50, it's more about legacy. What about my kids? What am I leaving behind for the society? And you are an amazing example of that. And that leads me to the next question. You've already touched upon it, that when you pass the 50s, you started to think a little bit different, even though you always had your grandmother's words with you. At what point? Was there any turning point that you decided that you wanted to give back to society? You have given so much to especially Oslo. We have spoken about the Ekebergparken. Before we had the new Munch Museum, you were involved in the previous Munch Museum. So I would like to know, when did you decide that this is something I want to do more of? Was there a specific turning point? And how has this thinking of yours influenced your legacy?
Well, I think, you know, first, before you can start really thinking about giving at a scale, you have to have something to give. And even though you're right that I grew up in a fairly okay wealthy family, it wasn't abundant. And I certainly didn't touch any of my inheritance before late in life. So I'm kind of self-made from the outset. And when you are building a business, you have possibilities to give smaller things, but then as you have success and you make more money, then of course you have much more of an opportunity to give. So it's not only about the wish to do it, it's also the possibility to do it. So I think, you know, from my point of view, it wasn't a particular turning point. I've always tried to give back in some sense, because, you know, it's almost like the Indian Book of Favors. You do me a favor, I do you a favor. The world is doing me a favor, then I should do a favor back to the world. So I think the idea was always there, but it comes with specific projects, and they can be quite random. I mean, for me, it became art and sculptures, first in the city of Oslo and then up in the Ekeberg Park, first through my company, which I don't own everything of, and I certainly didn't at the time, and then later more on a personal giving level. So, you know, it was gradual. It wasn't any particular turning point. But it became more giving once I got the projects. And it can take quite some time before you find something that interests you enough that you want to contribute. Because you can always give to many things, but if it is to be something that you're really burning for, then it has to be something that interests you. I have a lot of young people who have inherited, and they're not really interested in anything. And then, you know, it's hard to, but they always, after 5 or 10 years, they stumble over something, if it's the Ukraine war or if it's support of animals or whatever, and then they will become supporters also in an economic sense.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting in the world we are living in when we also look at how wealth is shared around the world. I just want to give you another compliment. I haven't given you many compliments
yet. You're giving me too many compliments.
No, it's but not deserved. In the podcast. But you have an amazing daughter as well. And I just wanted to ask you, when your grandmother gave you this sense of what is important in life, how aware have you been when it comes to your kids? Because your kids and my kids, we are privileged. They are born with a silver spoon. And how important has it been for you to embed the same values that your grandmother tried to embed in you, in your children? I'm saying this because I know your daughter is amazing. And maybe you can share some fatherly advice.
Well, I mean, I think there are many ways to do this, and it depends on the family and the circumstances. I mean, it's not uncommon that if mother or father has a vocation, then the children will do the same thing. I mean, lawyer follows lawyer, politician follows politicians, etc., etc. To me, I really did just what my father did. I said to my children that I will help you to pay your education. And I may help you with your first apartment, but apart from that, you have to manage yourself in life. So you have to find your own careers. You have to do what triggers you. You're not going to inherit positions in the real estate company or any other business that I have. Fortunately, I was married to a woman of the same kind of opinion. So even though we had more than enough money, we never spent lavishly. We were always kind of careful when it came to spoiling the children. So they learned that you have to make something before you can spend something, etc., etc. So they are pretty thrifty, which is something that I'm actually quite proud of. And also this thing that they had to find their own way through life. And I have three children, and one is more visible than the other, but the others are doing super in their fields. I think it's a lot about the value. But as I've always said, you can tell children whatever you want, but they will look at you and say and see what you do, and that is what they're going to learn. So, you know, I think they have seen what I did, and then they have picked up some parts of that, not because so much because I've said it, but because I've lived it.
Yeah. Very, very wise words you have shared with us, because I think what you have said for Indians, I have been discussing this with Indians as well when we talk about nepotism, because I share the same mindset like you, that no, whatever me and the father of the children have earned, that is not something automatically will be passed on to our kids. They have to earn their own name, their career, and whatsoever. And the interesting thing is Indians don't understand that. They're like, why? Why don't you want to give your son like a much better starting point? So I always have this interesting, they said, no, if we had that chance, we, like for instance, when the father of my kids and we get friends who say, oh, we would love your son to intern with us, or so we are, even our kids have started saying, no, we don't want to be associated with you, we don't want our name to even, you know, and that I think that's very interesting, because is that something that comes when you live in a society where your basic needs are met? So we know that our kids, no matter what, they will be okay, and of course we will be their backup. But it's very interesting, because even Indians, even they are very well off and have these discussions, they find it very strange to think the way we are discussing this now.
But I think you're right. It depends on what kind of society you're living in, and of course the safety net which is provided in the Nordic countries is a part of this. I also think that you know, maybe deep down, both they and I know that, yes, they will, of course, get part of this when later in life. But the greatest gift you can give to somebody is to give them meaning in life. And it is not necessarily meaning in life to keep on doing what your father or mother did. And especially if everybody is going to tell you, oh, yeah, I knew your father. He was quite a guy. Saying something about maybe you're not such a great guy. So, you know, it has its advantages and its disadvantages to inherit into a system. I mean, if it's an important system, which means a lot to society, then it could be that you should put that burden on your child to carry it on, almost like a king passes his throne to the prince or the princess in Norway at the moment. So, you know, it's not one size fits all. It really depends on the circumstances. But in my case, it was important to give them the chance to live their own lives.
Very, very wise words. And I cannot imagine actually what the burden would be like, as you were saying, to be compared to your parents all the time. Yes, then we have come to the... Well, before I go on to the last question, for our listeners, I would like to recommend you to listen to the podcast with Isabel Ringnes. We had her as a guest when we were discussing the fact that India now is having more female babies than male babies and what this will mean for India's future. So do check out the other episodes in the podcast, and it's really worth listening to Isabel, her passion for equality, and she's so vocal about also helping out the less privileged. I have a final question for you, Christian. You have already shared so many advice for our listeners, but what advice would you offer to those who wish to combat gender discrimination and contribute to the cause?
I think first and foremost, it's about being aware. I think there is a lot of gender discrimination just because people don't think about it. I've certainly been part of that kind of misunderstanding or not judging the world well myself, because you grew up with your parents' belief system, and of course the world is changing, so many of the things that they thought were okay, for example, woman at home, husband out working, they have changed tremendously. My daughter has actually written a book together with another woman, and it's called She's Banderer, or She's Buying the Lunch, or whatever you would translate it to. And the idea is that normally it's men who buy the female a lunch, and that gives him a certain privilege in some sense. It's enough to go to a bar and see all the men that ask the women to if they can buy her a drink. There is a hope, at least, for something more following that purchase. And so therefore she turned it all on the head and had a campaign, actually, where women were to invite men for lunch and then talk about equality. And in the book that she wrote, she has taken up all these hidden biases that we are not aware of. And I think that's where it all starts. You have to be aware that this is discriminating, this is okay. And you have to think far. In the book, she mentions a couple of examples from her own life. For example, that when she came to Silicon Valley as part of the Singularity University, the taxi driver would always say, "Oh, so you're the entertainment all night," automatically assuming that since she was a good-looking female, she would probably be playing something or singing a song, whereas all the techies, they were men, of course, and so she couldn't be one of them. And this is kind of understandable because you have seen a lot of it, but it's of course not correct. You have to not be so prejudgmental. So awareness is very important. Once you have the awareness, of course, there is a lot of things you can do. You can give opportunities. You can defend in the public, and you can help women forward. There is a lot of this going on, you don't need to be very smart to see where it's all going to end. It's going to end exactly the other way around. The world moves in pendular movements, and now in Norway, it's more than 60% of the high education is taken by females. They are quite dominant in many fields, in the public sector and among politicians. So if you go 10 to 15 to 30 years out, Today we have a quotation system where at least 40% need to be women, but that's not what it's said. It said that it needs to be at least 40% of the gender that is least represented, and this will be for the men when you come 20 years out in the time, because not only in India but also in Norway, it's starting to be a big preference for girls to be born, which is kind of interesting, because it used to be that it was better to get a son, but now wisdom has come to us, and we understand that the females are very, very important, and that they are maybe more giving than what men are. So, you know, I'm looking at this with a lot of pleasure. I see it's coming along. I see that we will one day have some kind of almost perfect gender equality. But I think we will have a problem with all the young men that are falling out of the system, because the females are now so good and so smart that they outcompete them.
Yes. I would like to add two things to what you said. One, the book that Isabel wrote, Hun Spanderer, which is actually She's Taking the Bill. Because I used to tell my son, whenever if a girl shows interest, you know, always be polite, you know, do invite her a coffee and say no in a polite way. And then my friend said to me, hey, this was okay in the olden days. Today you have so smart women that they will do anything to just have men paying for them and exploit these young men. So then I went back to my son and said, no, don't pay for them. Then you will get exploited. But back to what you said about 40%. In India also we see the same shift, Christian, that earlier wealthy, rich families, they relied more on the son-in-laws because girls were not allowed to inherit from the fathers. But then there was a law that was passed in 2009 or 2011 which allowed daughters to inherit from their fathers. And what you saw in India then, you won't believe it. Each of the dynasty families, you know, the Tatas, the Birlas, everybody started sending their daughters abroad for higher education, for MBAs, you know. And then all these daughters came back and they got influential positions in their families' companies, you know. So that shows how important tool it is to have such rules and regulations and law that give girls these opportunities. So now you see this, it was like you could see the trend. Suddenly girls were allowed to go abroad and study because they could take positions in their parents' company. We have come to an end. It has been a pleasure having you. And for our listeners, if you live in Norway, do buy Christian Lignes daughter's book and do visit the Ekebergparken, another museum that Christian has not spoken about. I will allow him to brand himself or brag about it in the last. You are also owner of another museum, which I got to see a few days back. Can you tell us about the other very amazing museum with a very interesting red room? I'm not saying anything more.
Well, I started collecting miniature bottles of all things when I was 7 years old, and I kind of never stopped. When I got older and with some means, I decided to build a museum to display these bottles. And I understood, of course, that would be quite boring unless I made something extra out of it. So I have 2,000 square meters of exhibition space, which actually consists of 52 installations, which are mostly interactive in some sense or form. It's a Disneyland where the theme is miniature bottles. It could have been many other things as well. We use it for parties, and it's also open in the weekends. And it's a very curious place, but it's a lot of fun. And then I would like to end this by thanking you for the very nice podcast. It's an honor to be here, and I think what we are talking about, the gender equality, it's really a fantastic way to utilize resources, because if you only use half the population and both parts are equally clever, you are really wasting a lot of good power for our future.
With this, we are ending this podcast. Thank you so much, Christian, for joining us and sharing your wisdom and knowledge and your experiences. A big thank you to all our listeners as well. We are looking forward to hosting the next podcast. But again, a big thank you to Christian Ringnes for being part of the Men Who Support Women podcast series of the Moderne India.